Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We welcome in our dear, close, longtime personal friend and the man who's going to save this show, our 1320 Kings insider and creator of the Kings Beat, James Hamm. Hammer!
I'm going to save you?
Yeah. This has been an interesting last 10 minutes or so.
You're going to save this show like Shaedon Sharpe is going to save the Kings franchise.
Well, I guess that's how we get into this right here. What do you you reported today that the Sacramento Kings interviewed Shaedon Sharpe, which, by the way, Shaedon Sharpe was one of several prospects that they interviewed while in Chicago, but Shaedon was the one who caught a lot of people's attention. What do you think about that young man, and what do you think about the prospects of him being a Sacramento King?
Yeah, I like that they're kicking the tires on everybody. They had prospect interviews with 26 different players at the Chicago Combine, and that is good. One of those players, of course, was Shaedon Sharpe. They also, the Kings, from what I've heard, have also they were at his 1v0 workout, which are always stellar. I've yet to hear a single player that looked bad in a one versus no one scenario.
I'd make the league if somebody had me in a 1-on-0.
Kenny, I might make the league. I don't know what you're talking about. No, I wouldn't make the league unless I just got the botched layups. Like, certainly can't hit a three ball unless Buddy Hield is in my face. I think that it's interesting. I think it's some gamesmanship. I think it's very clear that the Sacramento Kings want everyone in the world to know that they have kicked the tires on Shaedon Sharpe. And, that's kind of the way this thing goes. This is a really heavy top end of the draft. The top three are really good big men. And I think everybody would like to see one of those guys drop to the Sacramento Kings, but there's a good chance they won't. We talked about this on Wednesday, Kenny, when we were on, all day. The number four spot is becoming like a very, very big power position because it's the first spot that is obtainable in the draft. And if you look at the top three teams, I don't see Orlando, OKC, or Houston trading that pick at all. Those guys were all tanking so they could be in the position to draft one of these players. And this, where the Kings are at, that's the first spot. And then you have a couple of teams behind them, like Detroit Pistons, who are also in the same type of position that Orlando is in and that Houston's in and, OKC is in. They want to be as high as possible. They want to build through the draft. And so there's going to be teams that want to move up to number four to either jump over Detroit or to get a guy that they think can change their franchise. And Sharpe is probably the name that's going to get the most buzz here. Jaden Ivey will also get a bunch of buzz, but Shaedon Sharpe will get a bunch of buzz here.
So I'm going to ask the question. I kind of joked with it throughout the day, but I don't think anything happened. I'm pretty sure anything happened, but I got to ask the question anyway, James. Shaedon has his interviews, and then abruptly leaves. Too early for any type of promise from anybody, correct?
No, that's not too early for a promise. But at the same time,
Kenny's going to analyze the tone in which you used when you said that to determine if that promise was made by Sacramento.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that promise wasn't made by Sacramento. But that doesn't mean that they couldn't have been. I think what I read is that he left early, but it was actually planned for him to leave early, that he had something else going on. I don't know what for an 18-year-old kid is more important than doing interviews at the draft, NBA draft combine. But, you know, the one good thing I will tell you is that he did his measurements. You know, he went and did his height and his weight and his wingspan. He came in a little shorter than I thought he would at 6'4¼ without shoes, 6'5½ with shoes. That's fine for a shooting guard, but, you know, if he was going to transition to play some small forward, probably not a good size. 198 pounds, and then he threw up a 6'11½ wingspan, which has everybody in the world going, oh my goodness. So he didn't, you know, show off the alleged 49-inch vertical leap that he has, and he didn't do a bunch of shooting drills. He did that at his pro days. So I definitely think that, you know, he put in the work to at least show people how big he is and all that stuff. And he did interviews with a handful of teams and then got out of there.
Highest, this, you know, we're going to tie the whole show together here in this final hour with James Hamm. Does he have the highest ceiling?
He might. I mean, it's hard because any footage that we're watching of him is against high school kids. So, you know, like I would like to tell you that, you know, he's got unlimited potential and all that stuff, but, you know, he hasn't played in a year, really. And he was the number one prospect for the 2023 draft, although, I mean, in all honesty, he wouldn't be the number one prospect going into the 2023 draft. You know, there's two prospects that I think have moved ahead of him and would be ahead of him in 2023. You know, what is it? Scoot Henderson. And then, I can't remember. Wana Yabi.
He's from Australia or something like that? Or?
No, I can't remember where he's from, but I'll look him up during the break. Those guys are both like franchise changers. I don't know if he's a franchise changer or not. You know, he's a three-level scorer with huge hops and a gigantic wingspan. He definitely has a little bit of like Bradley Beal type game in him, and I think that's good. Yeah, there we go. Wimbanyama. There we go. Yes. Yep. Victor Wimbanyama. That's who will be most likely the number one pick. And I mean, he's like tremendous. Has like
for 2023.
Yeah, for 2023. But Sharp, like, you got to remember that this is a young kid. I mean, he's going to be 19 soon. But, you know, he's a kid that bumped up his draft year. So he should be a senior in high school right now. And that's why, you know, he reclassified. So, yeah, it's all interesting. He's, you know, to me, he's probably got the most intrigue. And this is what the Kings needed. The Kings needed someone of high intrigue to sneak into the top five and possibly the top three. Because then you start having a whole lot of other potential, you know, things that could happen. One of the big three big men could fall to you. A team could jump up, could offer you the moon to slide into the four spot. Even a team like Detroit, if they thought somebody was going to move up to get the guy they wanted and jump ahead of them, they could give up something substantial. And so I think it's a good place to be in if you're the Sacramento Kings.
Hey, James, the Kings meeting up with about 26 prospects. Is that par for the course? Is that more than usual, or is that less than other teams? Like, where does that rank with how things typically go?
Yeah, that was it was 26 with one day to go, so their total will probably be in the mid to high 30s when it's all said and done. No, this is typical. This is what you want from your team, because it's not just about today's draft. You know, this season's draft. There are other things to play here. You need to get a sit down with each of these players, because almost all of them are going to be in the league. And so you want to know who they are. If you have the opportunity to go and really kick the tires on somebody, throw a bunch of weird questions at them, and really get a good feel for somebody. Because, I mean, it's a small league. These guys come back around. You never know when one of these players might be something that you go trade for. And if you had a little bit more knowledge of them, then that's good. And I think that that's why you get so many, even the draft prospect workouts. I mean, we talked about this when we talked about Anjali Ranadive and the assistant GM job with the Stockton Kings. Like, every single one of these guys, if they're not in the first round and they're not in the second round, they're all going to be guys that are considered for like G League positions at some point. So it's good to know who they are. It's good to sit there and watch them play and see how they react to things. And just so you have a bigger knowledge base for, you know, the future. Because again, like that G League position, the G League is one of the hardest things ever to fill up, because I think you only have 10 roster spots, but you could lose five guys in a day. And then you got to go find five new dudes. You know, it's not like you just drop down to the YMCA and like, hey, who wants to go play for the Stockton Kings tonight? You know, because Kenny would have already played if that would happen. I think it's something that you need to, like, it's good that they're taking in all this information.
Do you think, as it pertains to that four spot, right now, it's really those three guys that we've been talking about, Sharp and Ivy and Keegan Murray? James really thinking about this one. Yeah, he's thinking hard about this question. Like, he is this he that's probably the greatest question I've ever asked right there. It has gotten Ham deep in thought. And now Ham, I believe, is done thinking. James, you wanna I don't even know if you were answering. You froze, like you were just asking the question. You were just giving this question great thought. Do you think right now, early in this process, the Kings are zeroed in on Ivy, Sharp, and Keegan Murray?
I think that they're in collection mode. I don't think they're making this pick. I think that someone else will draft number four. Yeah. I have, you know, if someone slides to them from the top three, then there's a possibility. But, you know, again, if it's Jabari Smith or if it's Chet Holmgren, that's one thing. But even Paolo Banchero, I'm not sure that Paolo Banchero really fits with Domantas Sabonis long term. And that's a problem. So, I mean, that's going to be the guy. So, but I know that if Banchero falls to number four, all of a sudden you're sitting on a like pot of gold. And the same thing, like Sharp is the guy, I think, more than Ivy, that can jump into the top three and push somebody back. And that's tremendous. So I think you want that to happen, and because it opens up even more options for you as a franchise. Like, who's going to be the team that wants so badly to get into the top four that they'll give up something? And again, I think the Kings are in a position of power.
It could also be dangerous, if you ask me, because I feel like, for me personally, you can get into a position where you just start outsmarting yourself and you start doing things just to do them, just to say, like, we're making moves. Like, I'm looking at this whole situation in – at four, with guys like Ivy, Sharp, maybe you throw Keegan Murray in there. If there is one of those guys that fall down, like, I need an all-star in the trade. Like, a good role player, that's not going to get it done. You know what I mean? And just moving back for the sake of moving back and, you know, and adding just what we consider a starter, that don't do it for me. Strauss is starting for the Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. I can get a starter anywhere. Like, I need an all-star. And I'm the only thing I'm worried about with this is they start making moves just to make moves.
I think it wouldn't be make moves to make moves. It's make moves to get better faster. I think that's what it would be. And that's the problem with Ivy and with Sharp. I mean, you could say that about Mathurin. You could say it about AJ Griffin. It's the problem with that grouping of players. It's that you just really have no idea. It's a total crapshoot. You hope that that one of them will turn out to be an all-star level player. But I think if you can get a plus starter, like a guy who may not be an all-star, but's really close to being an all-star, then, you know, that's a more sure thing than any one of these young prospects. And I know some of these young prospects could be really good. I don't think anyone is expecting this group to become superstars. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but like that doesn't seem like that's the potential of these players. They can be really good. They can be all-star level players, but there's a big difference between that and superstar. And you're going to have to wait 2 to 3 years for them to get there because that's typical. I mean, we're talking about an 18-year-old Shaedon Sharpe. Like that's really, really young to think that you're just going to heap a bunch of pressure on him to save the franchise. So, you know,
I mean, Anthony Davis is 19, isn't he? I mean, Anthony Edwards is 19, yeah. Isn't he?
He might have just turned 20.
Yeah. I mean, but again, that's a personality that, and he did play in college, you know? Okay. So yeah, it's a little different. I mean, he hasn't played. He should be a high school senior. So just think where he should be and where he is. I mean, he should be a kid going to prom. He shouldn't be a kid who's, you know, ducking out of the NBA draft combine and risking, you know, tens of millions of dollars by sliding down 2 to 3 spots if bad things happen. So, yeah, it's an interesting, like, these guys really, there's so much pressure on them to be good from a young age, and it's just how they deal with it. And you hope that he can deal with it well, but the fact that he didn't get the opportunity to understand that at the college level, you know, you go from high school where, you know, it's like a bunch of parents in the gym. Maybe you got some people in the gym, but maybe it gets up to, you know, 500 people or something. But if he would have got a season at Kentucky where all of a sudden you're playing for 30,000 fans or, you know, something crazy, you know, or you somehow make it to the tournament and you're at, you know, the Final Four where 70,000 people are in the building. Well, that's a different kind of pressure than playing in high school. And so we would have got to see a little bit more of like the response and how he fits into like a different style, like an actual pro style offense and all that stuff.
Yeah. I like what you're saying for all this. I do. I understand it. Yeah.
If I gave you the fourth pick, or, and you know, you throw in Rashawn or whatever else comes in this, but you get the fourth pick, or you get Collins or Randall or Siakam or Tobias Harris. Do any of those four names intrigue you to move the fourth pick?
Yeah, two of them do.
Siakam, I know, is one of them.
Yeah, Siakam and Collins. Now, see, Collins is a little different. Like there's a lot of murmurs that Atlanta. Sorry, I have allergies like horrible today.
It's a bad day for allergies.
It's a bad day. Plus, we had the whole house fan on until really late last night, just sucking all this pollen into my house. That probably was a poor decision. so to get back to it, yeah, I think it's a really good question.
Some people regret drinking too much. James Hamm regrets leaving the house fan on too late.
That's right. Yeah, so I think Siakam for sure. And then when you get to Collins, there's a lot of rumors right now that Atlanta is ready to get out from underneath John Collins' contract. And that's a big deal. And they also might look to get out from underneath Kevin Huerter's contract. Mm. And so all of a sudden I'm like, all right, game on. Yeah, let me see what kind of package that I can put together for something like that. I mean, like just spitballing, just this isn't a rumor. This is just one of those, like if I were sitting at number four type scenarios, like would I consider, you know, Harrison Barnes, who's got 1 year left on his deal. So you're going to save a whole bunch of money for the Atlanta Hawks. Rashawn Holmes, who they can go and deal to someone else if that's, or you can change it out, switch it out for Justin Holiday and Alex Len. You know, would I feel comfortable trading those two for the 16th pick along with Collins and Huerter? Yeah. Now I got a shooter. Now I got a second shooter. I'm still in the draft. I still have all of my, my rights as far as the Stepien rule. Like I can trade next year's pick. I can do all kinds of things. So, you know, there are a lot of things that I think could happen between now and what is it, June 23rd? Siakam is going to be the guy that's kind of hard to get because he's a proven all-star. And, you know, so that's one thing that I would think would be really hard to like, get Toronto to buy in. I think Siakam's under contract for 2 years. And but I still think he's a really good player. He's 28. He's a young 28. He's not an old 28. So it's not like he's almost 29. Again, he's under contract for 2 years. I don't know if I'd do it straight up. I'd want something else from Toronto for sure. But that still, you know, the number four pick, I think, has that kind of value. That's if someone decides that they're going to trade that pick. And if, again, if I'm Toronto, I'm thinking about it because you hit on Scottie Barnes big time. And you need to clear a spot for Scottie Barnes, but you also could drop back to Scottie Barnes like age level and start building up from there. And I think that would be a like an interesting move.
They hit on Precious too. With that pick, it's from Precious Okorah. They hit on that. See, I hear that John Collins thing, and especially when you start talking about taking in a lot of contract and a lot of money. And I'm just like, well, now I'm helping you out. Like, what do I need to give you for? You know, I'm taking stuff off your books so you can progress as a franchise. What do you need my number four pick for? I'm giving you Harrison Barnes. I'll give you Rashawn Holmes. I'm giving you NBA players that you can do something with. You don't need four. James, what I say on Wednesday, yesterday's price is not today's price. You have to come with a little something better than John Collins. So I out of that group, I think Siakam is the one for me where I probably wouldn't think twice. Collins, we'd have to negotiate a little bit. Maybe ultimately I would give up the four for Collins and Herter and all this other stuff. I'm not saying it's a no-go, but we'd have to talk about it a little bit more. The other two, that's not enough for me at four.
Yeah, you're taking on a lot, but like you're the guy who pitched Duncan Robinson to us. And Herter is a similar player, maybe a better player, and his contract is like $5 or $6 million cheaper every year. Mm-hmm. Like his contract is much more reasonable, and he's under contract for like 4 years. You know, so again, you're locking up, and the Kings need shooters. So, like, if you're gonna, you need to come out of this draft slash free agency with probably two or three starters. Like you've got to have, and at least like three or four rotational players. I mean, that's where you're at if you're the Sacramento Kings. Like, this team isn't good enough. So, you know, if you're going to expect them to improve and get better and you know, start to grow into something, then, you know, fill up the roster with NBA starters. I remember 1 year Dave Yeager looked at me and he goes, do I have one NBA starter on my roster? And I'm like, well, you got like a 35-year-old, 36-year-old Sebo. He's like, yeah, I mean, a legit at this point. Not
I believe
to
he was your leading scorer, Dave, if yeah, I remember
but
correctly.
No, like, but his point is like Sebo, loves Sebo. He was with Sebo forever, but his point was like
he's Sebo, not starting elsewhere.
No, he's not starting elsewhere. The only one that possibly could have been a starter elsewhere at that point in that season was George Hill. And George Hill played so poorly that the Kings dealt him for nothing. But at the same time, you know, I understood what he was saying. Like right now, you look at this team and you honestly say, how many NBA starters do you have? And you got to be honest because, like, again, like Sabonis is your center. So Rashawn Holmes isn't going to be your starter. He's not an NBA starter for you at this point. He could be for someone else. But realistically, you can only guarantee that Fox, Harrison Barnes and Domantas Sabonis would start on other NBA teams. And then you start to wonder, like, who are these other guys? Is DiVincenzo a starter? Is he a sixth man? Is Davion Mitchell a starter or a sixth man? You don't have any what you would call guaranteed starters. And this team needs to walk into next season deep enough where they have five starters, but really deep enough where they have eight starters, nine starters. And, you know, only five of them get to start, but you still got, you know, a bunch of players.
Real quick, Damien, I just want to ask both of you guys this. And this is an argument that I made months ago, and it's coming back once again. I just watched the Eastern Conference Finals, and Gabe Vincent and Strauss were starting in the Eastern Conference Finals and getting shots up and playing well. They just won game one, got beat up in game two. but they've been starting all playoffs. Saying that they need so much more, and what it sounds like to me indirectly, is that's an indictment on Fox, Sabonis, and Harrison Barnes. Because you got three guys that are starters in this league, that are bona fide guys. And if we need so much more than DiVincenzo or Rashawn or something like that, like, well, now, like, let's reevaluate the whole thing then. Because if those three guys, one that's an all-star, one that people think has an all-star talent, another one that is like a 10-year veteran that's put up 17 a game all the time, if that isn't enough to get you to the postseason or anything like that, we got way more concerns than we just need one or two more starters. We need to, like, clean house.
Well, no, I mean, you need an identity. You need a coach that's going to be here long-term. You need a system in place. Like, the Miami Heat can start whoever they want because they have a system and they have a, like, a time-tested system that works, you know. Mm-hmm. We can go back to Rick Adelman, you know, when he was with the Kings. Like, he just had a system in place that Peja Stojakovic goes down, you know, Hedo Turkoglu steps in. You know, the Chris Webber goes down, they go get Brad Miller, but, you know, again, Scott Pollard steps in, Lawrence Funderburk steps in. You have to have a system in place that can support that. And a lot of, again, what the Heat system is to develop talent and to get them to do things that make sense. So, again, like, we could go on forever. I had this conversation years ago with one of the Kings front office people that's no longer there. But, like, if you're looking at the G League the right way, in my opinion, the G League shouldn't be a place where you go try to find the next Pascal Siakam, because that's so rare. Like, maybe you get lucky and you come across a Pascal Siakam, but more likely you need to find like six Daniel Houses. Can I create a rim running shot blocker? Can I create a 3-and-D wing at the G League level? Can you create those pieces?
James wants us to think about that. Can you create those pieces? He wants everybody listening right now to think about that. Can you create those pieces? That's everyone's homework, is to decide whether they can create those pieces or not. It's James Hamm, frozen in time with this sentiment right there on the Sacramento Kings. I think the wind not only wreaking havoc on James's allergies. James, I think it's there. Yeah, I ain't taking James off the screen. We're just leaving frozen James Hamm on the screen right now until further notice. You know, one other thing. This is really funny for those that are watching, because James is just frozen. For those that are on Odyssey in 1320 AM, just trust this is funny, because James is in midpoint. And he's got something to say about this Kings organization and establishing an identity. And he's frozen in thought. You know, one concern I do have when we talk about trading, we were talking about how trading the number four pick versus trading the number seven pick or eight pick. Like, yeah, it's more valuable, but it's less romantic to me, because mm-hmm. I feel like there's something intriguing about drafting a young player as we bring in the unfrozen. This is the thawed version of James Hamm here on the show. James, I'm not even going to ask you to try to get back into the point that you were making. I think your kind of point was made about the Kings establishing an identity in this organization. And really, you're talking about plug and play, and that's why it works in Miami. And I was telling Kenny, I don't find trading the number four pick as attractive as I trading the number seven and eight pick. While I understand it's more valuable, I also think this team just went and acquired Domantas Sabonis, right? And I think we all believe, and history could prove us wrong, but in the moment, that feels like a home run play. And you traded a young Tyrese Halliburton for that. De'Aaron isn't young anymore. Like, De'Aaron, like he's young in terms of his age, but he's a veteran in the league at this point. Like, he's going 2 years into his max deal. I don't know that I want to trade it. Like, if it's an 18 or a 19-year-old coming in, I think I'm okay with that. If it's a skilled 18 or 19-year-old coming in, I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but the potential is that you waste a year of their career. I mean, or 2 years, waiting for this other piece to become who they're going to become.
But you could still be good. Like, Scottie Barnes was good. Like, you could be good. You can contribute.
Yeah, yeah. I think Scotty Barnes, like certain players, they fit that mold. They come in and they have a specific skill set that works. But other players, you know, it's kind of like if we look at let's just compare loosely. This isn't probably a totally fair comparison, but let's compare Shaedon Sharpe to like Tracy McGrady. How many years did it take Tracy McGrady to become Tracy McGrady? Like three? Like it takes a while, even for like top tier guys that are really almost can't miss guys. It still takes that much time. You're just waiting for this cycle. Kobe Bryant didn't average a bunch of points in his rookie season. You know, it's so rare that a player walks in and just starts performing. And like you guys brought up Keegan Murray, like if you want to be safe and like get a rotational starter, then Keegan Murray is like your guy. But the fact is, I don't think he has a ceiling. And you when you're drafting a number four, you have to draft for ceiling. You can't draft for floor. And at seven, you can draft for floor. You can look at a guy and say, okay, I think he can do this, and I pray that he can do this, but he won't be any lower than this, right? Well, when you're drafting number four, you got to say he could be this, and if he's this, it's okay because I took the swing.
We'll talk more about this. I also want to ask you about Jordy Fernandez and Jay Triano. We haven't talked about Jay Triano yet here today, so we want to dive into some of the latest members of Mike Brown's coaching staff as well, and we'll do that when James Hamm returns with Dealer 1 KC here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
KC continues. Streaming live on the Odyssey app.
Live on the Odyssey app. Only Jesse knows what a massive smartass remark I was about to make there on the live stream. I'll share it with you guys during the next commercial break, man. Stilo and KC. Brought to you by McQueen and the Violet Fog, the smoothest gin in the world, handcrafted in Brazil. First pour just 26 minutes away. James, 1320 Kings Insider, creator of the Kings Beat. James Hamm with us here. James, can you confirm, is Doug Christie officially on Mike Brown's staff?
No one within the walls will confirm.
Okay, because Mark Stein said he was. There was I don't think there was a report in The Athletic that he was, but there was a reference in The Athletic that that Mike was asked to keep Doug Christie, but I keep looking around like if James ain't said it, I don't believe it, and I don't see it. I didn't think that you had mentioned that yet.
I would say that no one within the walls will confirm, but there is a very good chance that Doug Christie is back with the team next year.
Okay, good stuff.
Yeah. So, good stuff. Yeah.
What can you tell us about Jordy Fernandez? Let's start there. There's a couple of official coaching hires that are public, and I want to talk about both of those and start with Jordy.
Yeah, Jordy is interesting, right? He's a guy, you know, that came over from Spain, worked for Impact as like a player development guy. Mike Brown met him, thought he was intriguing, brought him into the fold as his son's basketball coach and to coach an AAU team and to train his son and to be his personal like assistant to drive Mike Brown around when he was a coach in Cleveland. And then they stumble upon him and the Cavs say, hey, he's pretty intriguing. Can we hire him to be part of the staff? And so he works 7 years, I think it is, with Mike Brown in player development. He's known as a major, major player development guy. But then, I mean, he outlasted Mike Brown in Cleveland. You know, Mike Brown left and he stayed on and made it all the way to, I think it's 2016-17. He joined Michael Malone's staff in Denver, and he's been an assistant coach for the last few years in Denver. And like, by all accounts, like he's a nice rising up and coming guy in the league. And I think the biggest thing with him is he's the associate head coach. So that's basically your lead assistant. He does not have head coaching experience, but He did. He knows Mike like extremely well. And on top of that, he was part of the coaching staff for the Nigerian national team with Mike Brown. And so, like, these are the types of guys that you know he's going to be comfortable with, that'll be a sounding board that understand his terminology. He can start already, even though Mike Brown is still in the playoffs, he can start disseminating the lingo right now. He can start showing guys the playbook, sending playbooks out, having conversations with guys while Mike Brown is currently coaching. And so I think it's really good to get him in place right now. And he's a guy with potential. And I think the other thing that I like about him is that we're always looking for the coaching tree, right? And I think this is a guy who has future head coaching aspirations. But on top of that, he's Mike Brown's guy. He's the guy that Mike Brown discovered and has nurtured the relationship and feels confident and comfortable in him coming in and helping him run the show. So it's definitely, for me, it's a good hire. I don't know him personally, but you know, the NBA is a small world, and he's been on a really good coaching staff who just happens to have a gigantic center and Nikola Jokic that can pass. And I'd also, you know, I know Wes Unseld Jr. gets a lot of credit for the defensive improvements in Denver. But if you look at really that coaching staff in Denver, they've made like monstrous strides with guys like Jokic, who is an absolutely defensive gem, even though he doesn't look like it. He, like, the metrics on him defensively are spectacular. And, you know, if you can do that with him, you might be able to do it with Sabonis and some of the guys here.
I thought that was a fascinating journey and story. I was listening to the Kings beat last night and just how he got from where he was to now he's an assistant head coach on the NBA franchise. Just crazy where he's like, hey, Mike, what do you say? Mike Brown said, I got $500 a month, a fully furnished apartment, and, you know,
and you get to drive my car around.
You get to drive my Range Rover around. And
yeah,
it's crazy. And one of the things that you talked about, you mentioned a little bit that I want to get maybe your insight on, is when you talk about Denver, I feel like maybe the Kings and Monty and all these guys look at Denver and look at what they do with Jokic and be like, man, I'd like to get somebody from there so we can incorporate Sabonis into what we're doing. But then you're like, Mike Malone would never let anybody from Denver come to Sacramento. The fact that Mike Brown had the relationship to in the foresight to say, hey, I got this guy in Denver that I know if I get the job, I could just imagine him in an interview saying, I know if I can get the job, I can bring him over. And he has some time spent with Jokic, and we can incorporate that in what we're doing. Am I making too much of it? Or do you think that was part of the pitch? You know, having a guy like that come in and bring his expertise and some of the things he worked with Jokic into Sacramento to maybe incorporate that with Sabonis?
No, I mean, I think there's a legitimate, you know, like, he has basketball chops. And the one thing I'll tell you too is Michael Malone is a teacher. He's the son of a coach. He's a guy that, you know, has been around the game his whole life. You know, his dad was Chuck Daly's defensive coordinator with the Detroit Pistons Bad Boys. Like, Brendan Malone is an incredible defensive coach for decades in the league. And, you know, so I think Mike is a teacher. And if I'm not mistaken, Mike actually was going to be a teacher if it wasn't for him going into basketball. And so, like, look, that's something that I think is good. He's not a selfish guy. He's not a me guy. He's a guy kind of like Mike Brown, who is willing to impart knowledge and willing to bring up guys to be the next generation of coaches. And so I would look at it that way. And I would also, I don't know why I haven't thought of this before, but there has to be overlap between Michael Malone and Mike Brown in Cleveland. And, like, I haven't gone back and looked at it, but I almost guarantee those guys, you know each other well. I can look it up here, but yeah, that's one of those things where Michael Malone was an assistant in Cleveland. And I'm pretty sure that he had to have been there at the same time.
2005 to 2010, he absolutely was there.
Yeah.
So,
because Mike Brown, those are Mike Brown's years.
Those are Mike Brown's years. Yeah. And there are also, if you look, there's that one year where Jordy Fernandez is actually on the staff with Michael Malone as a player development guy. I think he started in 2009, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that with Cleveland, 2009. Yeah, well, all the way to 2016. So, yeah, like the NBA is such a small world. And so it makes sense, you know, this hire makes sense. It's someone he's comfortable with, someone he can rely on. We had a long discussion on the podcast. I think it's totally worth listening to because me and Sean Cunningham went back and forth, Fox 40's Sean Cunningham. And while we were going back and forth, you know, like we've seen so many different like iterations of coaching staffs and guys who, you know, it works out and guys that it doesn't. And I think a lot of these guys, you know, if you build a staff the wrong way, there's an uncomfortableness to it. And there's not wanting to step on somebody's toes. And there's not wanting to tell your head coach that you know more about defense than they do, even if you do, even mm-hmm. if you're a better defensive coach, and because it's their world. So like Michael Malone had his staff, which, you know, I thought was a bunch of good dudes, you know, again, going all the way back to Paul Westphal's staff, he had people on there that he had known for, you know, for decades. And then even guys like Brian Gates, who he had got, he plucked out and brought into the league. You know, every staff is so different, but, you know, George Karl's staff were a bunch of guys that knew how to support George very specifically. Dave Yeager's staff was a bunch of guys that had been through the minor leagues together and had this like incredible bond as like a brotherhood. And that was great. And then we get to, you know, Luke Walton's staff, and it was a bunch of guys who didn't know each other, and the whole thing fell apart because you could feel it the whole time. So I'm glad that Mike Brown is going out and hiring coaches that he's comfortable with and that he's known from the past.
And let's work Jay Triano into this. That was the hire that I don't actually know if it was officially announced today, but it was out there that Jay Triano is joining Mike Brown's staff. He's an offensive guy, worked with Terry Stotts and Charlotte. He worked in Charlotte.
He
was like the offensive coordinator, I guess, for James Borrego. That offense, that Charlotte offense that everybody seems to love. Jay Triano was a big part of that, and he, I guess, unofficially has joined Mike Brown's staff.
Yeah, he's a guy who does have head coaching experience. So I think that's one of the prerequisites that you always want. You want someone else who's shouldered.
Even if it's bad. He wasn't particularly good in Toronto. And I think he was
where he's 40 and 42 or something.
Yeah. He took over for, was it Earl Watson?
No,
in Phoenix. Like, I thought he was an interim coach. I thought he took over for Earl Watson. That might not have been him. My bad, sorry. Point being is he's spoken highly of, particularly as an assistant.
Yeah, he did take over for Earl Watson 3 games into the season.
Yeah, they had lost, like, those 3 games by 40 points each.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that firing very vividly.
Yeah, and then Igor Kokoskov took over the next season.
Okay, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, so this is good. This is, you want to bring in guys who have NBA coaching experience, because people, you know, if you're working retail and you've been a floor manager and you've been a department head and all that stuff, and you think you can just run your own store, you get to the point where you're running your own store and you go, "Oh no." Like, I don't have a good enough floor manager, and my department head over there is not good. And all of a sudden, you're in this whole new world where you're more conducting business than you are actually getting in and coaching. It's definitely one of those situations where having another guy who's been through that and understands the dynamics of how to game plan and how to, you know, everything that goes into being a head coach, it's so incredibly complex. And to have someone else on your staff that has been through it and knows how to get you through it, knows how to support you when the season gets hard, or when, heaven forbid, someone gets COVID and coaches have to step away. It is really good to have people who have a head coaching experience. So I think that's a good thing. Jay Triano is a guy who's been well-known in the league. He spent 20 seasons either as an assistant or a head coach. You name some of the places he's been, again, like Charlotte, Phoenix. He spent a long time in Toronto, a tremendous amount of time in Toronto, and then Portland. He was in Portland for four seasons, 2012 through, 2016. Yeah. So he's a guy with experience and a guy that you're going to hopefully feel comfortable with. If you're Mike Brown, but again, there's ties everywhere with these guys. So it's definitely a good thing that he's starting to fill out a staff with good, you know, respected coaches.
Yeah. Shout out Jill Latch, man. She, go to her Twitter feed if you need to. I mean, she just gives you the Cliff Notes version of, at the very least, of just figuring out, you know, who some of these coaches is. She did the same thing with Jay earlier today. And I just, you know, I went through that and read some things, saw some videos, saw some clips, and I fell in love with the guy. He's the type of guy I like. He seems like a basketball lifer.
He seems Kenny like be guy. Falling in love more than a 90s R&B record, boy.
I'm an R&B guy at heart, man. You know what I'm saying? I love love. You know what I'm saying? That's just me. I love love. But man, he's, you know, he has a passion for the game. It seems like he has a passion for teaching, and I think that's not no shot on anybody that was here before, but I think that's what's needed here. That's neat. A passion for trying to get out of this rut and everybody pulling on one string and one cord. And just from what I saw, he seems like a guy that buys into that. And then, you know, Damian's right. You know, you talk about his time with Charlotte, and I mean, I love what they do offensively. And if you compare that with some of the things that Mike Brown just instinctively does on the defensive end, that's a good start. It's absolutely a good start.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to see more. You know, we don't know the fate of all of the assistants and all of the development coaches and stuff. We don't know the fate of them yet. But I would say that there's a good chance that most of them won't be back. I mean, it's just kind of the way it goes. You switch out a whole bunch of things when you bring in a new head coach. Maybe there's someone else that they really like. Maybe Rico Hines stays. Maybe, you know, again, you know, I'm pretty confident Doug will be there, you know. But outside of that, like, I'm not sure. And it's going to get a little bumpy here. And some guys are going to get left out. And so.
Bumpier than your internet connection today.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, at some point, you got to hope that that Mike Brown gets to bring in as many people as he wants and as many people that can support him. And then a guy like Jody. Fernandez, right?
Yeah.
That Jordy, there we go. That a guy like him, if he's worked with somebody that he loves as a player development guy, and he's a player development guy, and he thinks that there's someone that can implement their plan as player development people, bring him in. You know, like, start building the thing out where we have, you know, the coaching trees are stable, and, you know, that you're letting Mike Brown kind of get his roots in strong and build something.
I know this is played. I feel like they're on to something. Like, I feel like this, feel like the, like, they got a little lottery luck. I personally, I know not a lot of people are in this camp with me. I like the Mike Brown hire. It seems like the assistants are going well. There's still a lot of work that Monty McNair has to do. By the way, Mitch Kupchak signed an extension today. Mitch Kupchak of the Charlotte Hornets. What does that have to do with the Sacramento Kings? Well, nothing. Just want to point out that Mitch Kupchak signed an extension. He coached all of the, his contract was up this summer. So all of the talk about Monty McNair and the extension, Mitch Kupchak GM'd, if you will, through his contract and signed an extension today and announced we'll have our head coach in the next 2 weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm just pointing it out. Doesn't mean anything. Just pointing it out. That's all. I have nothing else. It's I'm done.
I would still like to see him get his extension this summer. I just think if you're gonna go down this path.
And the one thing I'll say with this particular thing is and I agree with Damian here. Look, man, he was a lame duck GM and he orchestrated a good season, but. In this particular case, Kupchak is getting to mirror his new contract with his new coach. Mm-hmm. So that's where you know, it's a little bit of a difference. But I don't know. I don't like.
Chris brings up a good point. If you're a GM, you don't want to have things in common with Mitch Kupchak. That's a solid point.
I'm not
a big fan of Mitch Kupchak either. Like, I don't know how that dude keeps stumbling into jobs, but it's fine. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you there. I thought Chris made a good point.
I was just gonna say, in this particular case, I agree kind of what Sean was talking about. I mean, whether he's a lame duck GM or not, he's still going to do a good job or do the best job that he thinks he can. Because, number one, I think that's the kind of guy Monty is. But also, you don't want to do a bad job.
You know what I'm saying? No, but I would bring you the Brendan Nunes response, which I thought was pretty solid. I would rather have him choosing decisions that are right for the franchise long term and not decisions that are just about getting you into the playoffs. So if Shaedon Sharpe is the right guy, but you trade him for John Collins because you think John Collins will get you there faster, but you think that Shaedon Sharpe is going to be a superstar in the future, but you can't wait that long because you're not going to be here. Those are the types of that, you know, that's a valid point too. Like, you're putting someone in a position to make knee-jerk reactions. And reactions that are short term that you know, instant gratification that versus, you know, long term success.
See, when you look at, as we wrap up here, when you look at the growth of the Kings beat, like, that should be like, Brandon is your Shaedon Sharpe. Like, he's the kid who's coming up, who you've got time to develop as the Fox and Sabonis, the Ham and the Cunningham. They build out the Kings beat, and you got the rookie here getting his feet wet in the game, and you see, you guys have built a monster over there. You've built a winning team. I think that's you don't want to trade Brendan for another veteran. Like, you need the rookie there.
I agree. The only thing is
GM of the Kings beat.
it's really difficult. Okay, so we have high level basketball conversations, but those high level basketball conversations usually hinge around obscure movie references.
Ah, yes.
And it's really hard to have that kind of discussion when someone hasn't watched There's Something About Mary.
Well, yeah. You've also got to. What is Brent? We've got to go. What's Brendan's age? Do we know who's younger, Brendan or Jesse?
I think 23, 24.
Oh, it's close. Jesse, how old are you again?
25. I got that young kid beat.
Oh, man. You're in Fox territory. You're a veteran now. We got Best of D'Lo and KC coming up. And then we are headed to game two of the Warriors and the Mavericks. We appreciate you so much for being with us. It's D'Lo and KC. Brought to you by McQueen and the Violet Fog, the smoothest gin in the world, handcrafted in Brazil. First pour now. Have a tremendous weekend. We'll see you here Monday at noon on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
Go Dubs. Show us our respect.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.